This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from Wednesday the 11th of May. And what an absolute corker it is. Headline interview with His Highness Sheikh Ahmed bin Zayed Al Maktoum, who needs no introduction, but I'll give him one anyway. The CEO and chairman of Emirates Airline, among many, many other things. Speaking with Brandy Scott at the Arabian Travel Market. That's up first. Staying with travel, loads of big interviews today. We've got Andrew Brown from the World Travel and Tourism Council. We have got Issam Kazim from Dubai Economy and Tourism and Raki Phillips down the road in Abu Dhabi, where he heads up RAC TDA. All that to come.
Sat down yesterday, as is Arabian travel market tradition, with Sheikh Ahmed bin Zayed Al Maktoum, the Emirates chairman. He does this every year. He sits down with a group of media and very politely and graciously takes their questions. He gets asked the same things every year, even in a pandemic. But that is where the questioning started. So you can hear the voices in the background. You can hear the cameras, which will give you an idea of the sort of the scene that Sheikh Ahmed is sitting in the middle of. And the first question he was asked yesterday was, in terms of aviation at least, is the pandemic over?
For me, yes, it is over. I mean, still we see some countries a bit restricted till today. I'm sure you know many countries were still not open in the way that we, our terminology say that what's open and what's closed. But maybe they need more time, you know. But I take it on the airline level, I can say that we are nearly 75-80% up to where we were before the pandemic. And I hope that by the end of the year we can go up to 100%, you know, if the rest of the world is open.
So how is Emirates going to stage that return to normal, and what does it mean for the airport?
Still, we have certain point that we are not serving in the way that we want, because there is a restriction still, or they apply certain measure of restriction to say on certain route. But I hope that till by the end of the year, most of that restriction will be over. This is what I'm hoping for, and we see that we will be able to go at least to a full capacity. And this is why, by the way, I mean, the reason why maybe some people, they will think, why we brought up the doing the work that we see today at Dubai International Airport on the runway. It is a year earlier, because we anticipated that instead of really doing it next year, let's make sure, because this year it's less capital, let's finish the job, and then we forget about it for another 10 years to come.
Well, Emirates financial year, speaking of years, runs to the end of March. They've just finished. The auditors have been in looking at the results, and we're expected to get them at the end of this week, maybe Friday, maybe around 11 a.m. So Tim Clark has said that he expects airlines to return to profit, or expects that airline rather to return to profit next year. So in this financial year, but in the next calendar year, 2023. Sheikh Ahmed was asked, are you on track for that? How has the start of your new financial year gone?
Yeah, I think thanks God to see that the industry at least seeing positive number in term of good number. I can really say that it's good that I see Emirates, the startup of the financial year till today, they are doing good, they are profitable, and so good so far. And we hope that by the end of our financial year, we'll be able to make profit and also pay our owner back.
Well, by owner, of course, he means the government. And by payback, he's referring to the nearly 15 billion dirhams that the government injected in the airline during the pandemic. One really interesting question brought up during the roundtable, and not by me, was about the US reaction to that. Historically, we've had US airlines claiming and complaining that Emirates was getting unfair subsidies from the government here. So what did that equity injection from the Dubai government, what kind of signal did that send to airlines in the US?
They were complaining about us getting subsidy, which wasn't really the case. And we know that all the major top airline owned privately, or they went to their government. If they were in Europe, they were in America, they were in the Far East. And we were like anybody else when it came to the pandemic, because we had to stop completely. And we got it in terms of being announced. It was an equity to the company, and this is why I'm saying as of next year, I hope that we'll be paying back all that money.
Yeah, they're going to start paying it back in 2023, and it's going to come as part of the dividend that they pay to the government, Sheikh Ahmed has said. I'll tell you what I did ask, and I was the one who sort of metaphorically drew the short straw and asked the IPO question that he gets asked every time he sits down, Sheikh Ahmed.
It's different this year.
It is different this year because we've got this project, this scheme from Dubai to get more companies on the DFM, and they're going to take 10 state-owned enterprises or part thereof. So I did feel more justified this year in asking the IPO question. Every year he says what?
He says, don't ask me, I'm just an employee, you'll have to ask the owners.
Did we get the same answer this year? I hear you ask. Let's see how that conversation went.
The Dubai government, Sheikh Ahmed, has announced a plan to list 10 state-owned enterprises or parts thereof. Have you had any conversations about any of the Emirates Group being part of that?
Not yet.
None at all?
Not yet.
Would you like to see any of them?
You know, I mean, I remain, you know, as an executive in this company, that's up to the ownership of Emirates. And I'm sure that the list of companies that they announce, it's known, and the first one is already in the market. I'm happy to and pleased that we see they are trading.
But as someone who knows Emirates so intimately, which sections do you think might be the most suited for it?
I mean, this is what you guys always say, which company, what is within the group and which one. I leave it to you, up to you. You know, I don't want to commit on this. And as I said before, you know, I'll always leave it to the government of Dubai to decide which company or which sector.
One of the things that he was asked about was the Emirates fleet. Boeing has pushed back the delivery of the 777X. Emirates would like some. And he was asked whether or not Emirates was happy with Boeing as a customer.
You know, I think in the end of the day, we are left with two companies who can provide aircraft into the rest of the world. It's Boeing, it's Airbus, it is the type of aircraft. At least we know for today, for us in Emirates, that we do have a fleet. We have aircraft to be put back to the service and go back to the before the pandemic years, you know, and this is something really we're working hard on. Yeah, I'm sure that maybe you have to adjust really phasing out aircraft in that regard. It's not because that we want it. It is what's available in the market, and nothing we can do about it. Sometimes if there is a delay, there is a delay. But we have to really reorganize the schedule market, what we think that we were thinking of entering. Maybe it could be a delay there, and so on.
That's Sheikh Ahmed. He also spoke about things like fuel prices. He spoke about where Emirates was financially. Financial results will be out probably on Friday. Their financial year finished at the end of March. He says that they've started the new year, which, to be fair, is only a month old in Emirates accounting terms, in the black. And with a good push and a fair wind, we'll stay that way, hopefully. This is the financial year that Sir Tim Clark has said will be Emirates' return to profitability.
Well, talking of Sir Tim Clark, you did ask Sheikh Ahmed about succession. Sir Tim Clark's been in the job for pretty much two decades now, done a sterling job, but he is in his 70s, and therefore people are looking towards the next level of senior management within the organisation, or who's going to run the organisation going forward. And you asked Sheikh Ahmed about it, didn't you?
I did indeed. Look, someone always asks this question every time Sheikh Ahmed sits down, and he's quite used to answering it, which he always answers, by the way, in pretty much the same way.
I replied many times to that question, and still my answer is the same. I have many people in the company, and when the right time will come, you will hear about it.
Are you suggesting it will be an internal successor then?
I have all the option to do.
Yeah, the in the company bit I thought was interesting, because there has been speculation before about whether we could see someone come in from outside or whether it will be an internal promotion.
Or someone from another airline somewhere in the United Arab Emirates.
Who would know? Watch this space. I mean, let's be fair. He's not accidentally going to let it slip at a round table, is it? They're going to make an actual announcement.
They will.
Last 40 seconds. We have a fantasy league going on with these DFM listings. If you were to take one part of the big Emirates group that you think is most likely to be there and add it to your portfolio, a realistic plus wishful thinking, what are we taking? Donata says Tom.
Emirates Flight Catering.
I was going to take Emirates Flight Catering.
That's fine.
You can have in-flight entertainment.
I will take Fly Dubai.
Boom.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Turning our attention to the floor of ATM, where we have all been running around in one capacity or another in the last couple of days and will continue to. It's very busy down there, I recommend. Public transport or someone else driving the car rather than parking if you are heading down. Joined by someone I met on day one, Andrew Brown, Regional Director for Europe, the Middle East and Oceania at the World Travel and Tourism Council. Andrew, it's lovely to speak to you. Thanks for joining us.
How are you?
I'm good. And you have got some numbers for me, I understand. You guys work with the private sector of tourism and you have been looking at how they're faring economically.
Yes, we do. And good morning to you all. So the World Travel and Tourism Council, we represent the private sector globally. Our members are the likes of Etihad and Emirates, and we represent the private sector of presidents, chairs and CEOs. We produce annually the economic impact reports for 185 countries, 25 regions and the world in its entirety. So as you say, Brandy, we have just released the Middle East numbers, and they really show that there are the beginning signs of the recovery here in the region. For example, the contribution of GDP here in the Middle East climbed year on year 15.9% to reach $188 billion. The sector also saw a recovery of over 390,000 travel and tourism jobs. Now, that represented a positive increase of 7.6% to reach 5.6 million jobs here in the Middle East.
Are those numbers, are you comparing them to 2021, 2020?
Yeah, so that's comparing to 2020. So this is the results that we saw in 2021. So do you want me to share with you what the impact was from the pandemic in 2020?
You can.
Okay, great. So this, if we just roll back to 2019, so travel and tourism here in the Middle East contributed to 8.4% or $323 billion. And as a result of the pandemic, that halved. So there was a 49.8% loss, or, you know, and then the economy only contributed to $162 billion. In 2019, we saw that there was 6.9 million jobs here in the Middle East.
So let's put this in some kind of context, Andrew, for those who are still on their first coffee. What people want to know is, how close are we to coming back to pre-pandemic levels? Percentage-wise, where are we on 2019?
So that's the exciting part, Brandy. So this year in 2022, we're anticipating here in the Middle East that the travel and tourism sector will grow by more than 36%. So we're going to be in excess of $256 billion, amounting to 6.5% of the total economic contribution. And you mentioned, when will we get back to those pre-pandemic numbers? Well, looking forward to 2023, we anticipate with real optimism that we're only just going to be below those numbers, just 2.5%. So it's looking really great for the Middle East.
Where are we on the business tourism front? I've been chatting to the guys at Emirates over the last couple of days, and they are at about 70-odd% of where they were pre-pandemic for passengers in general. But business travel, they say, has only come back 40 to 50%.
Yeah, and that's what we see as well. Look, so the business travel currently registers around 15% of the total spend here in the Middle East, and that equates to $20 billion. And we looked at pre-pandemic, that was double. That was still 15%, but it was $40 billion. So that recovery is coming, but it will still be a couple of years away.
What's going to drive it? Why is it taking so long?
So it's just the nature of everything ramping back up, we see. So obviously people are now reaching back up there, that the travel restrictions are reducing. And I must say, here in the Middle East and the UAE in particular, the government has done a fantastic job of making sure that when travellers do travel, it's safe with all the protocols in place. So it's just a ramping up process that we're going through right now, Brandy.
Can your members, those private sector companies that form the World Travel and Tourism Council, find the people that they need to ramp up? How big an issue is staffing at the moment?
Look, that is the biggest issue in travel and tourism. We saw, as a result of the pandemic, 62 million jobs were lost across the sector. So in 2019, there were 330 million jobs. So that reduced by 62. And this is the biggest issue. We're really struggling here to attract new staff back. But if you look at it, travel and tourism is that sector that connects people. It is a people industry. So I think they are going to come back. And there is a lot of demand for folks to come back into the region, into the sector. So that is number one.
Andrew Brown is Regional Director for the Middle East, as well as Europe and Oceania at the World Travel and Tourism Council. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Right, let's talk tourism now. One of our top stories, Dubai attracting almost 4 million overnight visitors in the first quarter of 2022. A remarkable tripling of the figure from the first quarter of last year. Joining us on the line to give us some detail is the Chief Executive of Dubai Economy and Tourism, Isam Kazim. Isam, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Richard. Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
So was this just an expo bounce, or was there more to it than that?
I think, to be honest with you, it was more than that, in a sense that I think the world's confidence in Dubai and the way that Dubai handled the pandemic, coming right off the back of, I would say, what was kind of difficult 2020 and 2021, to say it mildly. But I think all the measures that were put into place, the way that the city reacted, the way the private and public sector worked hand in hand to ensure that there's a confidence, not just from the resident base, but also from all the travelers. And you could see that the search for Dubai, from even markets that were not as, let's say, frequent in terms of visitation, has really spiked over the past few months, I would say maybe the last 18 months. And that has really helped us to capitalize on that and attract more and more visitors to Dubai.
I mean, I'm looking back. I was on an Emirates flight a couple of days ago, and you can't escape the fact that Dubai and Emirates are very proud of the fact that Dubai is the world's number one destination this year, according to TripAdvisor's 2022 Traveler's Choice Awards. And it's a real feather in your cap, so congratulations. But how do you maintain that position, Isam?
I think, look, we've learned in Dubai never to take anything for granted. It's one of those things that's been happening over the past several years. When you look at the kind of bids for business events and conferences that we've been bidding for and winning, it shows you that there is that confidence, not just from us living here, but also those who are making those business decisions. So if you look at the past few months, not only have we managed to get more and more tourists and visitors coming to Dubai as leisure visitors, but we've also started to see a lot of companies moving to Dubai, relocating their global regional headquarters here, high net worth individuals moving their home offices here. There's a big concerted effort to really capitalize on these gains.
Brandy was chatting earlier with the guys from the World Travel and Tourism Council, and the question she asked was, what about corporate travel, which has been slower to rebound? What have you seen in the first quarter? Which bits of corporate travel are bouncing back fastest, and which are the laggards, Isam?
I think when it comes to the meeting side of things, things are progressing well. When it comes to the exhibitions, of course, they are tied into their usual visitor base, right? So you'd look at the countries that are participating, feeling a bit more comfort in going back and on the road. And also, I would assume that there will be many companies that are still trying to recover in terms of how much budget they want to allocate towards business travel. But if you look at it from a meetings perspective, that's something that's really been exciting. And if you look at ATM this year, even day one, the buzz that you could feel, it's probably even better than what we had seen in 2019. So the confidence from the travel trade itself, as ATM is is fundamentally important for all of that. It shows you that that kind of confidence is coming back. We're working from our side to ensure that even other events that were meant to take place elsewhere, and we did this previously when other cities and countries had shut down, we helped them relocate and manage their relocation and logistics in as smooth a fashion as possible, so that that business event can continue and really position Dubai in the forefront of everyone's mind.
So in terms of leisure and business travel bouncing back, we all know that the five-star beach hotels have been doing really, really well, really since the summer of 2020, and a great effort there. And the five-star business hotels are coming back now with events like ATM. I'm wondering, though, Issam, what you and the team are doing to help, you know, those three-star hotels down in Deira or those four-star service departments in Bur Dubai to fill them. They're the less glamorous ones. What can be done to fill those properties?
If we look back at a conversation we had early on in 2013, 2014, when we had first launched the strategy, we had always said that when we're going to go with a diversified market approach, we will need to look at a lot more hotels from different, catering to different budgets and in different parts of Dubai. And I think we've been successful in changing people's perception to that. Dubai has a lot of cultural offering, historical offering, and also these districts in Dubai that are beyond what they're used to seeing in those images of Burj Khalifa, Burj Al Arab, Palm Island, and the others. And that has become a lot more popular for specific demographics. With that in mind, we've also then worked very closely with the committees that we've set up with the different hotel sectors and really work with them hand in hand to align our marketing campaigns and our push and our efforts in those markets with products that are being put into place and designed for those specific periods of time, and aligning it with the trade on the ground in 50-plus markets where we have our campaigns running throughout the year. So we are working very, very well with them to ensure that we are getting as many hotels filled as possible.
Let me ask you about Saudi Arabia. Massive presence at ATM this week. Going to bring in Tom Urquhart now. Tom, you were down there yesterday. Well, Brandy was as well, but you particularly noticed some of the Saudi pavilions. Spectacular. Really big push by Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, a big presence by Saudi Arabia, both in size of stands, but also by the number of speakers and management that they have sent to ATM this year, giving a real indication of some of the interest being generated by the kingdom.
So, Issam, how do you make sure that this is an opportunity rather than a threat? Because obviously it's a little bit of both.
I think, look, to be honest, we're excited about what Saudi's doing. It's really given the whole entire region a chance and an opportunity to shine together. And also, if you look at it from a competition perspective, when we first started out on this journey, you can see that Dubai wasn't away from all these competitions. In fact, we were competing with a lot of destinations that were well-established at that point in time. And Dubai is not one to rest on its laurels. So we've always been pushing beyond what we have achieved in the past. And so far, we've got a lot of successes that we need to build on rather than be worried about competition. Competition is good. It really helps us steer away from any complacency setting in. And at the same time, I think the way that the whole region is set up, there are a lot of complementary factors that will definitely benefit all of us together.
Couple of final questions before we let you go. The metaverse, Issam, a lot of people talking about it down at ATM this week. We know the Dubai government has a metaverse initiative. We know that Emirates Airline, for example, is embracing the metaverse. Is it really something that could make a tangible difference for Dubai economy and tourism, or is it just a buzzword?
I think right now it's very new, but as everything that's new, you cannot discount it. So from our perspective, it's important for us to be aware with what's happening, be involved and engaged as much as possible, try to have our own presence within the space as well, and learn as we go with the rest of the world as well. I think if anything to begin with, it could be when internet first started, you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg before, you know, the mass benefits will be realized. But for us, it's important to maybe utilize it at this stage to introduce people, those who've never been to Dubai, introduce them to what's happening in the city, what they can explore, what they can see, and really entice them to come and visit for real.
Discover Dubai on Sandbox and then come and see the real sand pit with an Emirates Airline flight. Issam, great talk to you. Appreciate it. Issam Kazim, CEO, Dubai Economy and Tourism.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
A big old focus on Dubai and numbers out of Dubai, but it's time to turn our eyes northwards. It's time to continue the conversation on all things ATM, tourism, hospitality and otherwise. And what is that? I hear a calling.
London calling through the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down.
Yeah, That might have been the Clash calling for a calling, but there's a new calling in town, and it's rack calling. Racky Phillips joins us now live on the line. He's the CEO of Rack TDA, the Ras Al Khaimah Tourism Development Authority. Is this true? One of the big stories coming out of ATM this year, Racky, is that rack is calling.
Absolutely. Good morning, Tom. What a wonderful intro. Thank you so much.
Tell me more about the new initiative, if you can, or the new campaign.
So we launched a global marketing campaign called Rack Calling. And basically what it is, at the Arabian Travel Market, we wanted to identify the beauty that Rack offers from a nature-based travel destination, all of the exciting things that we have. So what we did is we did an integrated social media campaign with a group of influencer friends that are adventurers, that are thrill seekers, that are people that are trying to experience. And what we had is we had some amazing personalities. I'm sure you guys know Chris Fade, who's a colleague of yours. We had Jessica Kahawiti, who's a former Miss World, Raha, who is the Saudi adventurer who did the Seven Summits. And we put them all together on a day out in Ras Al Khaimah, and it came out with a wonderful social media campaign that has really been exciting and has been very, very well received. And it showcases a lot of the fun things that we have, from paragliding off the mountain to hot air ballooning. We had Danny Neville on a hot air balloon. To relaxing on the beach and dining at 1484, the highest restaurant in the UAE. So overall, it's a super fun campaign called Rack Calling.
Loving the campaign, but one question about it. Does it speak of the influence, the impact of digital branding at the moment, the importance of social?
It really does, because at the end of the day, I mean, 80% of people care more about their digital profile than their personal profile. This is a new stat that I found out. So the more that you can penetrate your client base through a lot of the digital platforms that you do, it's great. Plus, we've enhanced our website, visitjebeljais.com, visitrasalkhaimah.com, and all of this is an intro to maybe one day into the metaverse.
The metaverse, which has been talking to Issa Kazim about the metaverse as well. So that's certainly something in the pipeline at the moment for Rack TDA, is it?
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, we need to be aligned with what our consumers are looking for. This is part of why we launched as well our balanced tourism approach that really talks about everything from economic, environmental, and socially sustainable elements to tourism.
It's interesting, isn't it, because you talk of all things metaverse being sort of digital sphere, and yet when you've got the nature, when you've got the geography that Ras Al Khaimah is able to offer, it's hard to beat. Is adventure tourism still one of the main tenets, the main foundations for the program moving forward?
You know, it is, Tom, but at the end of the day, there's people that have different meanings to adventure. So it's great to be on the longest zip line in the world and have that thrill, or go paragliding off Jebel Jais. But you can also have adventure tourism where you're hiking or you're in nature or you're exploring things. At the end of the day, I think it comes down to what experience a consumer is looking for, and to ensure that we can have that diversified offering in Ras Al Khaimah.
In terms of the numbers, Racky, I know you've been kind enough to come on the show on numerous occasions and bring us up to date with the numbers. Obviously, that's something you're being asked time and time again down at ATM at the moment. How are the numbers looking? And are we still doing the price comparison with pre-pandemic levels?
We are. So as much as we look at 2020 and 2021 numbers, all of our projections right now have 2019 on there, because at the end of the day, the UAE is the fastest recovered nation in the world. And I think all of the measures that have been put into place, not just in Ras Al Khaimah, but really across all of the other Emirates, have helped this country be one of the fastest recovering destinations in the world. So what does that mean from a numbers perspective? We are seeing a growth that is almost double digits, about 8 to 9% in quarter one, compared to 2019. And we started to see the growth significantly impact in quarter four of 2021 and now straight into 2022. And this is even taken into consideration the Ukraine-Russia crisis and the price of oil and a lot of other impacts that generally will have a negative impact on tourism. But what we're seeing and we're forecasting by the end of this year, will be substantial growth compared to pre-pandemic levels.
I do love a phrase when it comes to all things tourism. We've had, obviously, eco-tourism, we've had green tourism, we've had sustainable tourism. You've brought a new one to the table, though, Raki, balanced tourism. Explain more, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, I mean, we launched balanced tourism. And if you remember in December at the Global Citizen Forum, we took an initiative to be the first certified regional sustainable destination in the region over the next 3 years. Now, what does that mean is everything from driving tourism growth, mitigating climate change, enhance environmental policy, and really having a social impact. And the balanced tourism is, it's great to be able to go out there with all the buzzwords that are pertaining to sustainability, but how does that impact investment? How does that make sure that our investors are still growing? And we looked at all of those impacts to make sure that from a cultural conservation, we're doing that, building attractions with purpose. And the most important part of it is, how do you enhance the livability of people's lives with tourism? And the UAE has done that so well. When you look at 12% of the country's GDP comes from tourism, 750,000 people are employed in the sector, and the overall livability of any destination is further enhanced by tourism.
And just further to that, I mean, obviously to achieve those goals, you need to delve into and agree partnerships as well. Are you getting a lot of interest from hotel groups, from investors looking to invest into this tourism vision in Ras Al Khaimah at the moment?
We have. I mean, there's obviously been a significant amount of investment announcements that have happened just in the last 4 months of this year. Obviously, the Wynn investment at the beginning of the year was a substantial investment. Al Dar has invested in Al Hamra Mall, as well as the Rixus on Marjan Island. And the investments that are coming into the destination Ras Al Khaimah are in the billions of dirhams. And I think the Emirate is going through a wonderful transition over the next couple of years to truly be a global contender. And I'm so excited to be part of it.
Well, we're certainly excited to keep tabs on it as well. Raki, before we let you go, I've got about 30 seconds. How good to be back at ATM face-to-face with big crowds?
Oh, I got to love it. I got to tell you, we were counting how many meetings we had in 2 days, and it was over 200 meetings. and this is just what we counted. We might be totally off, but it was great. It's good to see all of our friends and colleagues and the buzz. It's been fantastic.
Well done to you. Big appreciate you finding time for us in that meeting schedule today. Really appreciate it. All the best down at ATM today. And a big thanks for joining us. That's Raki Phillips, who's the CEO of RAC TDA, the Ras Al Khaimah Tourism Development Authority. You can find them at ATM.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.